You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by the MLB.com Shop.
Hi, this is Phil Rogers, MLB.com Extras, National League Central Edition. Talking about a division that's getting a lot of play, is one of the best in baseball, one of the deepest, with the Chicago Cubs making big improvements, adding veterans like John Lester together with young talent coming through the system. But it's going to be tough for any team trying to take on the Pittsburgh Pirates, who have filled their pitching needs, and the St. Louis Cardinals, who are always the team to beat. Going to be very interesting as spring training starts to get closer, and we look and see what these teams can do to catch the Cardinals. Joined by Jen Langosch. Jen, Happy New Year.
Thanks, Phil. Happy New Year to you as well.
Jen, I figure our colleague Anthony Kastrovitz had a nice way to get into this. He's made his resolutions, which were up on our site for all of the teams. And for the Cardinals, his resolution for 2015 was to improve in the power department. Would you agree with that one, or do you have another one for the 2015 Cards?
Yeah, no, I think that's pretty spot on. I think more generally would just be to improve offensively at the club. You know, the Cardinals, they didn't really like hearing about the power numbers. And, you know, it was something that we as writers that covered this team highlighted a lot throughout the year because of how historically low they were. I mean, you look at this team, fewest home runs in the NL. The only team with fewer in the majors was Kansas City. And you had to go back to before the strike, even in the strike season, shortened seasons, the Cardinals hit more home runs than they did last year. So, you know, we're talking more than 20 years ago since the Cardinals team had a figure as low as they did a year before. So, you know, it's certainly a concern. It's a concern when some of your biggest home run hitters are guys aging into their mid-30s. I mean, I'm talking about guys like Johnny Peralta, Matt Holliday. You know, so certainly you do wonder where the power is going to come from. You know, that being said, the Cardinals have made the point that power can manifest itself in different ways. It can be doubles. It doesn't have to be home runs. And, you know, there was certainly a belief here in St. Louis that for whatever reason, the ballpark was just playing a little bit bigger last year, whether that was weather-related, whether that was, related to the construction of Ballpark Village and the outfield and how that changes, again, kind of the wind patterns and this and that. No one really knew. But, you know, the Cardinals are certainly looking for an offensive uptick. That's, you know, unquestionably the case. They do hope that maybe Jason Hayward can offer an element of power, having acquired him to play in right field. But, you know, if the Cardinals can improve offensively, and even if those power numbers don't increase dramatically, they'd be content with that.
Hey, would you think of it, this is a 2014 question, really, not a 15, but do you think the Carlos Beltran factor was bigger than people realized when he was there? I mean, it seems like sometimes teams appreciate guys more when they're gone than when they have them. Do you think Beltran left a bigger hole than people thought he would?
Yeah, I think he certainly did. You know, you look at what he was able to do in his 2 years, you know, here, we talk about power, he was certainly able to supply that. I think the other thing that he really did was he gave the Cardinals a really nice number two hitter, and that was something that last year without him they struggled to find, and they went through a lot of different options throughout the season to try to find the best fit in terms of how they were going to construct their lineup, particularly in that area. And it wasn't as natural as when Carlos was here. Now, certainly, you can look at the season that Carlos had in 2014 and think that if he had stayed in St. Louis beyond the 2 years he was here previously, you know, his production did wane with New York, so it probably would have here as well. So I don't know if we can necessarily fault the Cardinals for cutting ties when they did, but certainly it left a void in right field. Now, you know, perhaps defensively, wasn't the strongest asset out there, and I think when we saw Randall Grichuk in particular play right field last year, you know, very impressed by what he was able to offer on the defensive end. But when you're talking about, you know, looking for the Cardinals to improve offensively, right field, they were at the bottom of the majors in production basically across the board. I mean, you look at any numbers, their production was horrific at that position. It's one of the reasons that they had to address it, particularly after the death of Oscar Tavares, who they thought might be the guy that could become kind of the next Carlos Beltran, a guy who, you know, could really stabilize that spot. They didn't have it last year, and I do think that the absence of Carlos did play heavily in that.
Yeah, I think all winter, a lot of people from the outside, the national analysts, have been looking at the Cardinals as a team that potentially could step up and add a really significant front-end type starting pitcher, but whether front-end or depth guys, John Mozeliak has shown confidence in the pitching staff he's had, only adding a couple of bullpen parts. Do you see that? Clearly, it's a vote of confidence for the group, and I'm wondering if that's more a vote of confidence on the health of Adam Wainwright and Michael Wacha and their ability to bounce back, and, you know, Wainwright just stay the way he's been and Wacha get back to the two-year-ago form, or is that how good they feel with Lynn and Lackey, the guys that sometimes don't get a lot of notice but are really very solid front-end type guys themselves?
Yeah, I would say it's probably a little bit of both. I mean, certainly when you talk about health, you have to highlight Wainwright and Wacha. Wacha missed about half of the season last year with an injury, you know, that the Cardinals are still trying to learn a little bit more about. And if you look at, you know, it's a rare injury in baseball. The one pitcher who has dealt with it in recent years is Brandon McCarthy. If you look at his track record, it's an injury that has forced him out for stretches in multiple seasons. So that's certainly something that, the Cardinals, you know, again, don't really know what's ahead for Michael Wacha, but hard counting big time on his health this year. And, you know, Wainwright obviously had a tremendous season last year despite pitching through a lot of elbow discomfort, had a cleanup surgery right after the season ended. You know, the Cardinals seem very confident that he'll be ready to go this year. But, you know, without that doubt, you know, their decision to trade away Shelby Miller in November, while it addressed the hole in right field in the big way, it did bend their depth substantially. You know, you also look at last year, saying goodbye to Joe Kelly. You know, here's two young pitchers that the Cardinals thought could be part of their long-term rotation plans that you no longer have. So when you thin your depth in that way, when you do have some injury questions, when you have a question in the number five spot with Carlos Martinez, you know, is he ready to be a starter for 30 starts a year? You know, the Cardinals don't know that for sure. You know, certainly I wouldn't be surprised if still between now and spring training they do go out and get another arm. They're in an interesting spot because they have the financial flexibility to go big if they wanted to. That being said, if you look at the Cardinals, especially under this management team, they're not a group that likes to go and spend huge on starting pitching in the, you know, free agent market. They're willing to give a big contract to Adam Wainwright, but he, again, came from within the organization. So when you're talking about a Max Scherzer type, those sorts, I'm just not sure that there's a fit in St. Louis, even though financially there could be. That being said, if the Cardinals find somebody maybe that can provide a little more depth, a guy who could be a number 3, 4, 5 starter, that I think would be appealing to them to give them another option in case of, as you mentioned, whether there's health concerns with the top two in the rotation or with Carlos Martinez potentially not being ready. So I think adding to that depth could be a benefit to this club.
You know, one guy they did add is Mark Reynolds to kind of share the first base load with Matt Adams, maybe start against some left-handers. But I'm wondering about a guy that filled in there some last year. Xavier Scruggs seems to have had a pretty solid winter again in the Dominican Republic. Is there any way there could be room for both of those guys on the team, Scruggs and Mark Reynolds?
You know, I have a hard time seeing both of them making the team out of camp. You know, that being said, the Cardinals have shown in the past, you know, that if Mark Reynolds or somebody of that ilk doesn't work out, they're willing to let them go and bring up the internal option. I mean, you know, we saw this a couple years ago with Ty Wigginton, and it just, you know, he was signed for similar reasons, you know, a bat off the bench, veteran presence. It didn't work. They cut ties in the summer. And we're able to address that internally to some extent. So, you know, Xavier Scruggs is a guy that Mozeliak and others in this organization really like. As you mentioned, he had a good winter ball season. He also played a little bit of outfield during that time. So, you know, in terms of increasing his, you know, exposure to different areas, I think that's certainly a positive. So, you know, I have a hard time seeing, just based on the club's makeup, how he would necessarily make the opening day roster. But again, that being said, if he has a strong season in AAA, and if Mark Reynolds, for whatever reason, struggles, there could be a switch at some point midseason.
Another guy, I know he's way down the organizational list, but has had a nice winter. Anthony Garcia, 23-year-old outfielder, played last year for West Palm Beach and really didn't even have a big year there. But in Puerto Rico, where maybe the pitching isn't as deep as it is in the Dominican or Venezuela, he's had himself a very nice winter, hit .328 with a 1.057 OPS. So he's just been killing it. You think could a guy use a winner like that to put himself on the radar?
Oh, yeah. You know, and the Cardinals are among, you know, they're showing not alone in this regard, but are among the organizations that really encourage a lot of their young guys to get that exposure and to get those extra at-bats or maybe work on, you know, moving around defensively or whatever it may be in the winter to prepare themselves to make a jump the next season, you know, in pro ball. So, you know, when you talk about kind of the opportunities that are there, you know, I think it's a great one for some of these prospects. And you do look at, you know, there's not a lot from the major league roster, you know, this year in particular that have gone down. Carlos Martinez is an exception in that regard because he has gone and pitched a little bit down in the Dominican. But for the most part, it's your minor league players looking to try to make a statement, looking to impress, maybe looking to learn a new position, trying to make up for at bats lost, maybe due to injury or just being squeezed of playing time during the regular season. You know, a lot of times those players then can come into spring training probably a little bit more ahead because they've been playing for much of the winter, so it gives them a little bit of a leg up initially. So certainly can be a springboard for success heading into this next year.
Well, thanks very much, Jen. As always, joined by the inimitable Tom Singer, Pittsburgh native and Pirates beat writer. Tom, Happy New Year.
Thanks, Phil. Same to you and all our listeners.
Perfect. The way I'd like to get started today, our colleague Anthony Castrovitz came up with New Year's resolutions for all of the major league teams. His one for the Pirates for 2015, he said they resolved to be more than a wild card club. Wondering if you'd agree with that or you have one to add to it.
Well, I pretty much agree, and that the resolution actually was voiced by Clint Hurdle, the manager. Wild card games the last two seasons, he said they were fun, but, you know, we've had enough of them. We want to be able to plan for a five-game postseason series, not the possibility of one and done. So Hurdle himself has put that on the plate, and that's the goal, is to obviously return to the postseason, but not as a wild card
Yeah, you could be a wild card team like the Giants or the Royals last year. Nobody would complain about that, but that's a good trick to pull. And an improved National League Central looks like going into spring training will be a division where I don't know if there will be yes, the Cardinals are the favorites, two-time defending champs, but beyond that, you know, you would think the Pirates haven't been back-to-back teams would be viewed as the strongest challenger, but do you see it as a wide-open division for 2015, Tom?
Well, yes, I do, but by the same token, there's the opinions being formed that unlike the last couple of seasons, you know, in 2013, you had two wild-card teams coming out of the Central, that the division is so toughened up that obviously you play most of your games in the division. It'll be really tough for a second team out of this division to make the playoffs. So really, you have to shoot for the division title if you have hopes of getting into the postseason, because teams aren't going to be beating up on each other every day, and it'll be really tough to get a second playoff team out of this division, which is another reason why, you know, the team Hurdle, GM Neil Huntington, is definitely targeting the division title, because they feel that it'll be really tough for a second team out of this division to, you know, make the playoffs.
Yeah, it seems like one of those divisions it might be as tough to pick the last place team as the second place team, with the Cubs adding John Lester and Miguel Montero, Chris Bryan at some point. It does look like a much better division. And looking at the Pirates' new business, you know, they've certainly made a lot of roster moves while keeping the core intact. But one thing on the table, they're still in the negotiating window with the Korean shortstop slugger Young-ho Kang. And wondering what your view on that is. Is that some sort of a wild hair on the Pirates, or are they really serious about getting a deal to bring him from Korea to the U.S.?
Well, they definitely want to make a deal with him. I mean, they're negotiating. You know, there's radio silence as far as that's concerned. We're not going to hear anything about it until it's done or the deadline passes, which is the 20th. My sense is, you know, we've you know, the Alan Nero, his agent, said he's looking for a four-year deal, about $5 million a season. My sense is that the Pirates are discussing those numbers, but they want it to include a lot of performance incentives, not all guaranteed. So, I mean, we'll see if they can strike a deal. The interesting thing with Kang, I mean, if he does join the fold, most projections I've read view him as a future second baseman. Doesn't quite have the range to play shortstop in the majors. And obviously, we've got Neil Walker playing that position with the Pirates. So, I mean, you know, a couple of years down the road, it's an interesting dynamic that if they do sign him and develop him as a second baseman, what that means for the future of Neil Walker.
Tom, I'm not that bad at math. You might think I am, but I look at the Pirates arbitration cases. Speaking of Neil Walker, I've got 11 players eligible for arbitration, and using the projections, MLBTradeRumors.com, which seem to be pretty accurate, $36.3 million potentially from those 11 cases. To have that many art cases, do you think this is a team that could have a lot of turnover in the next year or two, including a guy like Neil Walker if they don't sign a long-term deal now?
Well, it's a possibility. The interesting thing about having such a heavy arbitration docket, I think it's been several years since the Pirates have actually gone to a hearing. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but Neil Huntington's seven seasons as the GM, I think they've only had a couple cases total. So that's a lot of deals to strike to avoid going to a hearing. Neil Walker has this and one more arbitration year coming, which is why there's interest in signing him to a long-term contract. And I think the Kang situation kind of factors into that. I don't want to oversimplify it, but it may be a situation of either signing Walker to a long-term deal or committing to Kang. Doing both seems, highly dubious. I mean, there's really no sense in striking long-term deals with both of them. So, I mean, it'll be interesting to see how it plays out. And, of course, Walker might present Huntington's number one biggest challenge during his tenure as GM, because not only did Walker have a career season in 2014, but he's also obviously a hometown guy, very popular. There's a lot of, general managers are fond of saying you make decisions based on the team's well-being, not only on emotion, but it's really tough to keep the emotion card out of the whole Walker situation. So it'll be interesting to see how it all plays out.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think that's going to be a main thing to watch for the Pirates in the coming year, with certainly the a guy that's productive and very popular, very well spoken, a guy the fans love. And they've already kind of they have their franchise guy in McCutchen and a lot of other talent around it. It seems like maybe to have all that group together, including Neil Walker, this year going back to where we started, it heightens the importance on being more than a wild card team. You never know if you're going to keep a team together, but the economics seem to be getting tricky for the Pirates.
Yeah, I mean, it's a relatively young team to portray them this season, let's say, as a make or break season, because it's a relatively young team. But given some of the financial limitations that this team has, that may not be out of the realm of possibility to call this season as their hump season. Yeah, definitely a possibility.
Looking at the last month or so, they certainly shored up that pitching. When the year started, the hot stove season started, they had a couple holes in the front of the rotation, but the signing of A.J. Burnett to a one-year deal, bringing back the 2013 star, and then getting Francisco Liriano signed to a three-year deal. Suddenly, they have, a lot of starting pitching depth, don't they, Tom?
Oh, yes, they do. And, there's a couple typical reclamation projects who will be in camp. One of them is Clayton Richard, the left-hander who very recently had a couple of 14-win seasons for the Padres. He's coming back from, he missed last season with following surgery. And the guy that kind of fascinates me is Radames Liz, the guy who pitched for the Orioles back in 2009, last time we've seen him in the majors. He spent several seasons in Korea, and when the Pirates first signed him, his Korean ledger looked kind of sketchy. But then again, you know, when they made the bid for Kang, we kept hearing so much about how Kang's offensive numbers have to be discounted because Korea is such an offensive-oriented league. And looking at through that prism, his 3.40 ERA in three seasons in Korea kind of speaks kind of highly of how he's on himself and maybe somebody to watch. He's, you know, he's a big right-handed power pitcher. And, you know, like I said, he hasn't pitched in majors in 6 years, but they might have a real nugget in this guy.
Yeah, I think the guys like him could be really fascinating. And, I mean, he went to the Dominican Republic this winter, made five very strong starts, 29 strikeouts and 23 and two-thirds innings in those starts. And backing it up, yeah, I'm like you. I'm very anxious to see how he pitches. There was one thing, talking about Kang, it's funny how this stuff comes about. I was reading a scouting report on Kang as a hitter from a guy that had played in Korea, and he talked about how he could hit the best velocity in Korea, and he cited Radames Liz as a guy that was, he could even hit Liz. So interesting that the Pirates could wind up with both of those.
Yeah, definitely. And, they've had really good success with rehabilitating pitchers going back to, you know, Burnett's 2012 season and obviously Liriano and even Volquez last season. But I think Liz could be the greatest reinvention yet of, pitching coach Ray Searidge. We'll see how it goes.
Hey, this time last year, I think you had great perspective on Gregory Polanco, who had a great winter, and then got off to that great start in AAA. And, you know, you were pointing out he still hadn't proven himself. And at the end of last year, Travis Snyder was, you know, the regular right fielder. And even though Polanco was up, there wasn't much room for him to play. Going into spring training, what's the outlook for Polanco? Does he look like – which roster is he more likely to be on at the start of 2015, Pittsburgh or the AAA roster?
Oh, definitely Pittsburgh. I mean, he's got the right field job. It's his to lose, as the cliche goes. Everybody's anxious to see him. He'll be refreshed. He didn't play winter ball this season for the first time. He did have a couple tough last couple months of the season. But, you know, they say this about all talented prospects. We're anxious to see how he overcomes that first situation of having to bounce back from something negative. So, I mean, he's definitely got the challenge to prove his bounce back ability. But everybody that I've talked to concedes that by second half of last season, he was kind of worn down because he'd played nonstop since the beginning of the 2013 season, including winter ball last year. So he's going to be recharged, refreshed, and recommitted. And Starling Marte's been working out with him regularly in the Dominican Republic, and he speaks very highly of his mental attitude and how hard he's been working to get back to where he was, when they first called him up, making adjustments as far as the off-speed pitch, which was predicted to give him trouble, did give him trouble. But he's a very smart individual, by the way, not just as a ball player. So I think he's got both the mental fortitude and the physical talents to come out of the gate strong and fulfill his potential.
Well, can't wait for him to get started and get him back on the field. Tom, thank you very much. And as always, joined by Adam McKelvey, Brewers beat writer, enjoying the Midwest winter, as am I, and I'm sure most of our listeners. Are you staying warm, Adam?
Yes, I you know, it's layers, Phil. As you know, as a Midwestern guy yourself, it's all about layers.
And Packers, Cowboys, who you got? Dumb question, huh?
Well, yeah, I mean, you have to say Packers around here or they'll come lynch me and, you know, they'll break down my house and then I'll be much colder. It's a good matchup. That's, you know, I'm sure you were there at Lambeau for the Ice Bowl when Bart Starr plows in from the one-yard line to beat the Cowboys and send the Packers to the Super Bowl. So that's a very historic matchup. And, of course, you got to go with the
I wasn't there, but I know many of my fellow Texans who were. And that's still a little bit of a dagger to the heart, but I've rebounded and would be kind of fun to see that game played in that weather. But on to the Burt Crew. 2015 resolutions for New Year's. I think I forgot to tell you Happy New Year too, Adam. But our colleague Anthony Kastrovitz came up with a resolution for every team, and for the Burt Crew, his resolution was to play a full season. Wondering if you would agree with that or you have one of your own.
Well, that's a good one. They have had in recent years very disjointed seasons. Perhaps that's true of every team. It seems to me, though, that the Brewers' swings have been more dramatic than others. Oftentimes it's been that they've played poorly and then come on late, and it's given them hope going into the following season. Last year it was obviously the opposite, where they had the best record in baseball deep into the season. They had the best record in the National League into July, and they were really thinking about the playoffs. There was no doubt to the owner, Mark Attanasio, that they were bound for the playoffs, and then the bottom just simply fell out on that club. And you know, Phil, we've talked about this before. The question then was, do the Brewers break things down and really do a rebuild that club that collapsed, or do they look at it more like, you know, it was a bad 6 weeks at the end, but that there's enough talent to bring them back and give it another shot at playing a full season. It seems pretty clear by this point in the offseason that they're doing the latter. They feel like that is a good team that had a bad 6 weeks. And right now it appears that Doug Melvin and his crew are betting a lot on the fact that they can bring this team back as it is and compete in what looks like a really good division.
Well, since that day back in mid-November, I guess it was, when they traded for Adam Lind, they've been among the quietest teams in baseball, maybe the quietest team in baseball. Did you kind of expect that after that move? That was, they filled the one big hole they figured they had, that needing a offensive first baseman, a guy with a little pop. And after that, did you think it would be this quiet?
Well, I mean, that was one of the scenarios. And, I still think the door is open to some sort of big move. And the two guys that the Brewers could deal if they choose to make a splashy trade would be Yovani Gallardo and Kyle Loesch, each of whom is going into the last year of a contract. They have six starting pitchers who they like. So there is some depth if they wanted to make a move like that. And you know, they could probably get a fair return for either of those pitchers. So I think the door is still open to erase this narrative of not doing anything. But I also think it's equally possible that, like I said, that they like their team, that they've done all the statistical analyses, they've looked at the rest of the division, they've looked at the history of their own players, and they do believe, and I know this from talking to some of the club people sort of on the sidelines at the winter meetings, they do believe that this is a good team that can win the National League Central next year. That is probably a minority opinion if we were to poll the people listening to us right now, but I'll tell you, that's the view inside the front office. And with Doug Melvin in the last year of a deal, with Ron Renneke in the last year of his contract, I think those guys are sort of, as I said, betting a lot on the fact that they're right about that, that this team can compete as it's currently constructed.
Another guy who you could argue is surplus when they put all their parts together, Gerardo Parra. Either he or Chris Davis. I mean, you can platoon them, you can play one of them full time. But could they use that outfield depth also in making a move?
Absolutely. That's another good spot. He's a final year of arbitration player. He'll be a free agent after next season. you know, qualified as a Gold Glove finalist, even though he was essentially a backup for both the D-backs and the Brewers for big parts of last season. He's that good defensively. A great potential trade piece. You know, but again, I talked to Brewers people, and listen, a lot of this is sometimes positioning for making a trade. You never want to announce that you have this surplus guy that you'd like to deal that doesn't put you in a good position. But they do tell me, you know, on and off the record, that they are equally comfortable going into the season with him as an extra guy. You know, that'd be about the best fourth outfielder in baseball. And it ensures you against Ryan Braun having more issues with that thumb that ruined last season for him. It ensures you against Carlos Gomez getting hurt, a center fielder who bangs into the wall all the time. You know, as far as the platoon, the one interesting thing about it, it does look like, well, why don't they just platoon Parra and Chris Davis, who's a right-handed hitter, Parra, of course, a left-handed hitter, in left field. They view Chris Davis as an everyday guy. And when you look at his slugging numbers and compare it at his point in his career with other players, he compares really favorably. He's quietly been a really good hitter early in his career, and the Brewers view him as their left fielder. So I don't know that we're going to see a straight platoon out of that position.
Ryan Braun and his comeback, with spring training starts a little bit later this year than normal, buys a little bit of extra time. Will he be doing much hitting before going into spring training, or, you know, the Brewers just want him to take the full time to let that thumb recover from the surgery?
Yeah, as I understood it, Phil, he was going to do his usual routine. I've never known, I've been in the game, this is my 15th season now, I've never known a more of a routine guy than Ryan Braun. I mean, down to the minute of every day. He is not a guy who sits in the clubhouse and plays cards ever at any point in his career. So I think he's a guy who clings to his routine and his process, and that's what allows him to let the results happen. And good, bad, whatever, his view is that as long as he sticks to his process, he can live with the results. So that's a long way of saying I expect that he'll do his off-season routine as he's done every other year, which is, you know, rest at the end of the year, do his cardio-type stuff, weight training, and then begin hitting this month after New Year's. So it's about this time that he's going to start ramping up. And I don't think it's his plan to significantly dial back the number of swings he takes going into spring training. I think they want to see where this thing stands. It was feeling good around Thanksgiving. He had that procedure to numb the pain in his thumb. But everyone said that they won't know for real until he starts getting into hitting and hitting a lot. And I think he'll do that before spring training to see where that thing stands. The hope is that procedure knocked out the pain, and that's it. But, you know, you're talking about New Year's resolutions for this team. Getting Ryan Braun back, boy, that would change everything, I think, for the outlook of this club. It's like adding a player, really, after 2 years of not having him. So that's a big one, and I wrote just the other day that, you know, I think Ryan Braun is the one player that's going to determine what happens to this club. It's, you know, you can't often say that in baseball, but I think he's going to be that important to the fortunes of this team this season.
Well, I don't think many people would disagree with you, Adam. Thank you very much. As always, joined by Mark Sheldon, Reds beat writer. And Mark, good place to start, I think, is going back to our colleague Anthony Kastrovich's New Year's resolutions for each of the clubs. And for the Reds, he came up with for 2015 to be one of the few teams who simultaneously rebuild and reload. I think he means rebuild and contend in the same year. Do you go with that one, or do you have another one?
I think it's just the year that they are trying really hard to keep a window open of contending and trying not to do too much, but also not giving up. They're really in a tight spot. They kind of backed themselves into a corner with some of these big contracts they have. They don't want to write off the season. They also know that they have a lot of players with track records that, when healthy and when productive, can keep this team going very strong. So They are doing some interesting things this winter, and we'll see if it pays off. Well, it's going to be a very, very hotly contested division.
Well, when last we were all together at the winter meetings in San Diego, you were one of the guys that got slammed on the way out the door with a lot of work with the one day in which Walt Jocketty traded both Matt Latos and Alfredo Simon. Looking at the return in those deals, is there a guy from either of those that really jumps out and excites people? I guess probably the closest guy would be Dee Scafani from the Marlins.
Yeah, I talked to a couple of non-Reds baseball people, and the two names that did stand out were Dee Scafani and Eugenio Suarez, the shortstop they got from the Tigers. Dee Scafani can possibly go in the rotation this season. He's, a top 10 prospect according to MLB.com, and we'll see. There's going to be some battles for the number 4 and number 5 rotation spots, and he's definitely in the mix. Suarez, who has had limited major league experience thus far, and I think is what considered maybe an average or slightly above average glove in the field, but he had some good minor league years, and I think he could be a guy that if, at least in the beginning, could be a backup shortstop to Zach Cozart, but he's definitely someone that Cozart can keep an eye on, and this could help him. This will be a good chance to have some depth there, and competition always brings out some of the best results.
Yeah, I got to see Suarez a lot last year with the Tigers and talked to Omar Vizquel about him, who was coaching the Tigers and worked with him. Very excited about his potential. And he's a guy in short bursts has really hit, too. So I agree that definitely an interesting guy. Listening to Walt after he made those trades, he talked about, hating to give up, that pitching talent, but knowing he had to do something and that this would kind of clear the decks to give him some flexibility to be more aggressive later on. And the move that's happened since then, the addition of Marlon Byrd to play left field, a guy that hit 25 home runs last year with the Phillies and seems like a nice short-term fit for the Reds lineup despite 185 strikeouts last year. But he's an $8 million guy. The Phillies are reportedly paying half of that salary. Did you think it might be a bigger move, or was this kind of what you saw them angling towards, something like this?
I thought they were going to go with a higher on-base percentage guy, but in terms of the kind of guy they got and for the length they have him, this does check the box that they wanted and that I expected. They really didn't want to go long-term with anyone, knowing that Jesse Winker was around the corner within a year or so. Yorman Rodriguez, excuse me. But I also think it's one of those moves. I think it could be, if Marlon Byrd is doing what he did at the end of 2 years ago in Pittsburgh and what he did last year for the Phillies, it could be a big payoff for the Reds. But he is 37 years old. He hasn't got a lot of experience in left field lately. So it'll be interesting to see what he does. And, of course, the strikeout thing does loom. He said he's going to be working on some things to improve on that, and we'll see what happens. One of the things the Reds really do need, though, is a guy that can get on base. And it makes you kind of wonder what they're going to do with the top part of the order, like the number 2 spot and the number 3 spot, how that's going to play off, because they need to have guys on base for Marlon Byrd to drive in.
Yeah, no doubt about that. And, a lineup that's going to be looking for big bounce back years from Brandon Phillips and Joey Votto probably have as much to do with how the Reds turn out in 2015 as any of these moves they make to add. Looking at their rotation and how, they clear strength of the team, the depth of the starting pitchers now kind of, and really, you could say traded away, but really kind of an inevitable economic casualty. You could see that coming. Wondered about the health of Homer Bailey after flexor surgery, and it seems like, along with, not that they're, exactly, the coverage's not there when you still have Johnny Cueto and Mike Leake. But What's the outlook for Bailey? It seems like it's been a nice, quiet winter for him in his recovery from that flexor surgery.
Yeah, I talked to Homer about a month ago at Reds Fest, and he was very optimistic. He said he was felt like he was about a week, week and a half ahead of schedule. He's been working out at home in Texas at a rehab clinic with a guy, and he's been happy with the results. He's kind of had to forego all his usual off the grid hunting activities and all that stuff with the bow. He's a bow hunter, and he can't do that right now, which is good for the Reds in the sense that he's been able to focus 100% on getting his arm ready. And so far, so good. The question right now is whether he'll be ready for opening day or not, and it's going to be close probably because of that type of procedure. But they don't expect, at least when they went off for the offseason, they didn't expect that it would be long into the 2015 season, that maybe he misses a start or two. But maybe he's ready, and it's one of those things. I'll have to wait and see how it comes out in spring training. But right now, he's feeling like he's on schedule, and he was preparing to start throwing right after Christmas. So, we'll see how he looks come February.
It seems like just across the board in Major League Baseball, there's still some big moves to be made, not just free agent signings, but maybe a trade or two. And you do hear nationally people throwing Aroldis Chapman's name into that mix. Is that just grabbing a name and throwing it on the wall, or do you think that's something that, for the right package, Walt Jocketty could potentially do, but in the short run?
I think it's more of a name throwing against. It's a hot name, of course, but I guess they would have to be so blown away by the offer to even consider it. Because again, they're in it to win it this year, and people have speculated the Reds were going to sell off or they were going to do all these things, and they held tight at July 31st when it would have been a prime time to trade a guy like Chapman or Cueto, and they didn't do anything in the off season to this point. And I just think if they're looking to contend and they're saying they're contending, and I believe that when they say it, Chapman's got to be part of that picture for now. And then of course, though, if things go south and don't go well in the first half of the season, I think anything could happen. And Chapman would be somebody I would definitely consider looking to trade if they're not contending, because that'll be the time that signals, okay, it's time to really rebuild. And right now they haven't really done that. That's not something that the ownership wants to do. And so it's hard for them to make that decision to say, all right, they're going to trade Cueto or trade Chapman or trade Jay Bruce. That's just not something that they can do and still hope to contend, and they want to contend.
Yeah, why wouldn't they? Why wouldn't they think they can contend, really, with the high-end guys they have in the middle of the lineup, the front of the rotation, Chapman as the closer? I mean, this is a team, I think it's been a bit of an off-season whipping boy for national analysts that kind of in a hurry to see it torn down and built back with young players. But, a team that hasn't really reached the destination you thought it might have had, going back to that series, that playoff series against the Giants when they were one hit away from moving on to the NLCS and couldn't get it. More kind of in wrapping up, looking at the Reds in winter ball, performance that jumped out. Felix Perez, left-handed hitter, born in Cuba, an older minor leaguer, all-star in the International League last year. Just having a huge winner in Venezuela, hitting .360, nine homers, .965 OPS. Tough for a left-handed hitter, left-handed hitting outfield first baseman to crack that core. But what do you make of his big winner?
Well, he's a guy that's been in the organization now going back to 2010. He's a guy that. He does pretty well. He's been with AAA Louisville now for about four seasons, so you got to wonder if he'll ever get a look in the big leagues. He hasn't been one of those guys that they've really looked at, but one thing the Reds do need right now is, and if they can't find one in the open market, they really do need a guy that can come off the bench and give them a home run here or there and hit well. They also could use a backup first baseman because, with Joey Votto's situation, although they expect him to be ready, you just never know. They use Brian Pena there and Todd Frazier, but I think they'd like to not do that as much. So he could be a guy, in my mind, and not into spitballing, that could fill that role if they weren't able to find anyone else. But I would be wondering if he comes to spring training and gets a little bit of a look.
That sounds great, Mark. Appreciate it. Joined today, as always, by Kerry Muscat, Cubs beat writer. Happy New Year, Kerry.
Happy New Year, Phil. Everything so far, despite just the weather in Chicago is a little brutal, but otherwise it's fine.
Yeah, we had a kind of dodge the bullet in December, and maybe we'll pay for it in January, but it's been sort of slow on the hot stove circuit after a very busy November and December. Our colleague Anthony Kastrovitz wrote an interesting thing recently with New Year's resolutions for all Major League teams. And Anthony's resolution for 2015 for the Cubs was to be the most improved club in baseball's deepest division. That to me seems, I would almost guess the Cubs have higher aspirations than that. What do you think about Anthony's, and do you have one of your own for the Cubs in 2015?
I can see why he'd pick that. You know, I know that they're anticipating being much, much better and much more competitive, and I know they don't want to finish in fifth place anymore, which they've done for, I think, the last four or five years. If I had to pick a resolution, I guess I would still want fans to try and be patient, which I know is impossible to expect of Cub fans because they've been patient. But it's going to be a really interesting year, and I think the biggest thing to me is just waiting to see when guys like Chris Bryant show up, you know, and how that impacts the rest of the lineup and how that impacts, you know, what's going to happen with this team.
Yeah, it's very interesting when you come off the year that the Cubs are coming off of, which again showed a little improvement, especially late in the year. It still take another 10 games just about to become have a winning record, and it does have a feel like if they made that level of improvement and got to a winning record but did not seriously contend for a playoff spot, that would almost be a disappointment. You feel like they're really are getting set up with expectations that might be a little out of whack given where they're coming from?
I guess to me, just a little. I mean, you added John Lester to the group, but nobody knows how Travis Wood's going to rebound from this past season. You know, Arrieta's done well. How will Kyle Hendricks do in his sophomore year? There's going to be some adjustment period, I think, mainly because there's a new manager and some new coaches that are involved. One of the things I'd really like to see with the organization is a little, you know, consistency. Sorry, that's a hard word. Consistency. Only in that, you know, Madden's now the third manager in Theo's four seasons here with the team. So it's little things like that I just want to see how that happens. That's why I would sort of back off of, you know, any talk about the Cubs winning the division just yet.
Yeah, and certainly a strong division, too. But looking at the off-season development and all of the talent that is starting to come at the high levels of the minor leagues and guys that will be in spring training, it certainly looks like, barring any other major moves between now and Mesa, the competition, you know, whether it's for the last jobs on the staff or even if it's young guys competing to be on a double-A roster or a triple-A roster instead of a double-A roster. I mean, it's pretty exciting thinking about all that talent that's going to be not just on the backfields but on the big fields in Mesa, isn't it, Kerry?
Yeah, plus the other thing to me is that, you know, I don't know, you know, I've heard stories about how Madden likes to use a lot of players and likes to use the whole roster. You know, I think for me coming into 2015, just as an observer of the team, is just what does Joe Madden like to do, and how is he going to adjust to the National League? It's more, you know, okay, you've got a guy like a Alcantara, and you've got Javi Baez projected as your starting second baseman. Plus, you also have a guy like Tommy La Stella. How is Madden going to work those three into the lineup? Is Baez is his opening day second baseman, and then you've got Alcantara moving back and forth. I mean, it's I'm kind of curious to see that kind of stuff. You know, how is he going to manipulate all those players? You know, it's Castro, boom, he's at shortstop and that's it. And then Baez doesn't play over there. Who's the opening day at third baseman? Do we go with Luis Valbuena? Does Mike Olt, you know, does a light bulb come on for Mike Olt and he figures it out and we're going that way? So I know Cub fans keep asking me if I'm excited about 2015. I'm not really. I'm more curious. I think that would be a much better way for me to describe coming into this year.
Yeah. One situation I wonder if it, we know with the Theo Epstein front office that the roster's never set for very long and the next move's never very far away. Wondering about the catching situation now that they've added David Ross along with Miguel Montero. Do you think this is a situation where they almost have to trade Wellington Castillo before spring training, or could they go to spring training with essentially three big league catchers in Castillo, Montero, and David Ross?
Part of me would like to see them keep Castillo and have that depth, because they don't have that depth in the organization. I know it's probably not what Wellington would want to hear, because he probably wants to be the regular guy coming into the year. But I can also see how the Cubs would hang on to Welly and then maybe wait and make a move, you know, see how spring training goes with the three of them and then make a move after that. I guess to me, that, like I said, there's not... It'd be really tough for Willie to go backwards from two seasons as the regular guy in the majors to AAA. I don't know if that's even I don't know his option situation, but I guess part of me wouldn't mind seeing the team keep him, because I know that the depth in the organization just is a little weak at that position.
Yeah, absolutely, and I think that's the way Team Theo, Jed Hoyer, Jason McLeod, that's the way they operate, just to get that as much inventory in the organization as possible. So I'm with you. I don't necessarily think they certainly wouldn't give him away. I'm sure they've had plenty of chances this winter to move Castillo to another team and haven't done it. Kerry, it looks
Theo said that, you know, he's not shopping them. Not after they got Montero, the first thing he said to us was that they weren't shopping Welly, but he did say that, you know, they're also not going to say no if people call and ask about them. So,
you know, development's always a big story with the Cubs, and this winter, Javier Baez, Arismendi Alcantara, a couple guys definitely in the 2015 plans, playing some winter ball. What do you make of both of them in winter ball, Javi Baez and Arismendi Alcantara?
Well, I know Baez is down in Puerto Rico playing, and I know the fans are upset at the strikeouts. He did strike out 21 times and 43 at bats in the regular season. He's been playing in the playoffs for Santurce down in Puerto Rico, and I also know that the Cubs hitting coach John Maley went down there to work with him for about 5 days, and it's not that John did like major makeover on Javi. It was more of just a sort of getting to know you kind of session, and gave him some things to work on, and also for him to see what Javi's approach is in games. It was a really good experience that way. And I think the key thing is that Javi knows better than anybody and any fan that he has to cut down on the strikeouts if he's going to be successful. He knows that better than anybody. So it's just a matter of, let's see what happens in spring training when he shows up and he starts talking to the other players and everything. I think that'll work. Alcantara, I think, is had a pretty good winner for Lise. I don't think he's playing anymore, but and he played second. He played some outfield. Like I said, he'd be kind of interesting guy to see at the top of the lineup. I'm sort of eager to see how that goes, if the Cubs can use him that way and if he's developed the on base type approach that they want for that position.
Yeah, he was an interesting guy to me last year. He always seemed to be a guy that seemed like he'd get a lot of good things on the field, but his final totals, you know, didn't really reflect it. A little like seems like year in, year out, Luis Valbuena, you see him do all these big things, and at the end of the year, the stats aren't quite what you think of. That's probably a good sign for a player.
Yeah, and again, it's just, you know, these guys, the best thing that happened to these guys, to Alcantara and Tobias and to Soler and Kyle Hendricks, is that they got the taste. They got a taste of what it's like. You know, people always, college football players always say that, you know, once they get to the pros, the game just goes so much faster. You know, here in the big leagues, you know, they can see that they, you know, if they're a pitcher, they can't get away with mistakes. You know, if they're a hitter, how the pitchers don't make many mistakes. So once they get that little taste of it, I think it helps them in the offseason coming into spring training, and it's, you know, it gives them something to think about and something to, you know, how much better do I have to be if I want to make it, that kind of thing.
Well, Kerry, my advice, try to stay warm, do the best you can in our Midwest winter, and we'll talk again soon. This has been Phil Rogers, MLB.com Extras. Thanks very much for listening, and we'll catch you the next time.